There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it. There you go. With the qualifying.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 1047, June 10th, 2024, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say Boy George should have won the race. Dando Lando should have won the race. When the 70 laps were over, it was win number 60 for Red Bull's secret agent, Maxwell Smart. Checo checks in for two more years at Red Bull, and sadly, Parnelli Jones, one of the greats of IndyCar racing, has passed away. Back to you, Chief.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Max wins and breaks more records. Power wins in the fromage state. Chadwick wins from pole at Road America. Larson wins at Sonoma. And we have a new Tech Talk with Tim. It's going to help us understand the complex technical regulations for the season of 2026. And this week's interview, a wee bit of Danny Sullivan. And just a reminder, ladies and gentlemen, that yes, we do need your contributions to keep this program up on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you want to. Nass, I know you had that Canadian spirit. You were singing that, "Oh, Canada." But in the end, Max, who shouldn't have won, won. And it was still an awesome, chaotic race.
Yes, for whatever reason, the races in Montreal are very exciting and thrilling. And Sunday we had a fantastic Maple Leaf rag. And this is what happens when Mother Nature interferes. Normally, in such circumstances, Big Daddy comes out on top at the end. It was a case of we let it slip away, and that was the tune at Mercedes and McLaren. And there is life in the old dog. LCH almost made it to the podium despite saying this was his worst performance. And Prancing Horse did not come out to play in the rain. Where have you gone, Niki Lauda? We miss you so much. So before we get into the splashing details of the race on Sunday, shall we do a quickie on Colley?
Pedro De La Rosa is in the room right now.
The more things change, the more they remain the same. Max P1 in Q1. His teammate, the two more years at Red Bull, Checo, out in Q1. Did that surprise you, sir?
You know, I know the car is suddenly, well, it's not that great. Apparently Max can still wring its neck, but this not so great for Max is killing Perez. He can't do anything with it, and he could be out of Q1 for the rest of the season. I mean, it's a little bizarre, and as we march over to Barcelona, things might perk up for Red Bull, but I'm telling you, they've got some serious suspension issues, and I don't know. Are they sandbagging, maybe? Are they trying to add a little spice to this wonderful marinara sauce?
Well, we'll find out in Spain. Mercedes won 2 in Q2 with Georgie Boy ahead of soon-to-be-departing Hombre and Lando Norris 3rd, with Max 7. This set the stage for a surprising and rainy Q3. The rain did not come in Q3, but the result was very surprising and exciting. Russell was the star of Mercedes, setting the fastest lap, but then Max matched his time to start 2nd on the front row. Shades of Jerez de la Frontera, 1997, when the top three qualifiers, JV, MS, and HHF, which is for Heinz-Harald Frentzen, all set identical times. And as per F1 rule, whoever sets the fastest time first gets the pole. Row 2 was all Papaya, Norris and Piastri. Row 3 was Daniel Ricciardo, who told JV to suck it up, and Alonso. Row 4, Lewis and Yuki, and Yuki Tsunoda has been confirmed for 2025 at RB, which really did not surprise me. Yuki is like a line from the song Moon River. Wherever you're going, I'm going your way. Let me guess, one of your favorites, right?
It is one of my favorites. Moon River.
Same here. Wherever Honda is going, he is going their way. Time will tell if Aston Martin will be his breakfast at Tiffany's. Some might say he is as cute as Miss Holly Golightly, but that's another story. Row 5 was local about to explode talent Lance Stroll and Alexander Albon. Meaning, after 30 races, Logan Sargeant has yet to outqualify his Thai teammate. And as things turned out in race, Logan Sargeant is working overtime to make sure he does not have a seat next year. What was your take on Colley Senior?
It was fun. Good to watch. Obviously, the struggling Red Bull up front all by himself and Sergio Perez being out in Q1 was a big one, but also the Ferraris. I am sorry, but something went wrong in Canada because I expected the Ferraris to perform very, very well here, and I was completely wrong, like I am most of the time. So, I think Ferrari was surprised that Ferrari was slow. Frédéric Vasseur, eloquent, polite, but still, he said we just have to do our work and not cry a lot like children. So, no, very interesting. And of course, now we all know that McLaren are pretty fast, copying that floor. And everybody's said it. I mean, everybody's copied Red Bull all along for quite a while since last year. And it's making everything work well for McLaren. McLaren, I think, has done the best job. And I was expecting Mercedes to compete for this win. I mean, I was excited when George was on pole. You know that LCH was going, man, am I feeling old or what? So it was tough.
Yes, and my pre-race thoughts were pretty simple. This day and age, if Max is not out-qualifying other teams by half a second, it is a case of Milton Keynes, we have a problem. So based on that, I thought if the condition remained wet and wild, man on pole position George Russell will have the best shot. On the other hand, I thought Lando Norris will win the race because McLaren has been on an uptake since winning in Miami. But as Christian Horner said in post-race interview, what goes around comes around, referring to the Miami Grand Prix where they lost the victory because of safety car. In Montreal, they won the race thanks to safety car and, of course, sheer driving brilliance of their undisputed heavyweight number one driver. Motor racing is always very exciting when you don't know who's going to win before the start of the race, because in days of Uber domination, which seem to continue in Formula One from time to time, we all know who's going to win after Q3. Sunday in Montreal was different. Canadian mist made it difficult to see who will win the race. George Russell, starting from his first pole position of the season, was looking for win number 2 of his career. Do you remember his first race with Mercedes and how he, if I may use the word, B-slapped Bottas in Sakhir?
Exactly. Actually, that's when Bottas started to show his buttocks a lot more, calendar-wise.
There you go. All drivers started on intermediate tires except for the Haas drivers who were on full wet tires. I'm glad they kept the standing start in the wet. Rolling starts are for Lane S car and Indy cars. The top two rows kept their positions at the end of the opening lap, and surprisingly, no drama despite the slippery condition. Star of the show in the early stages was Kevin Magnussen. This was very impressive. Lap 2, he passed LCH for 6th. Lap 4, he was 4th. He was moving up the field rapidly. Same lap, Team Ferrari, radio tells Charles Leclerc, we have engine issue, but keep pushing. That you only expect from Ferrari. The heroes of Monaco became zeros in Montreal. Somewhere crossing the Atlantic, the prancing horse lost its footing. lap 5, K-Max set the fastest lap. Now, the old glory, Alonso and Hamilton were in close company. You know what is interesting and very commendable? They hardly do a Ocon or Maldonado on each other, which is very impressive. And I think even in the 2007 season, they did not do a Suzuka special. Do you recall if there was any like a coming together between Lewis and Alonso and his teammates in 2007? I don't.
I don't really recall 2007, as you know, but no, these guys are professionals, and it is fun to watch the old guard hanging in there. I mean, going off topic real quickly, the other day I was noticing that Boris Said is still driving, and he drove in NASCAR recently. He's 61 years old, so these things could last for a long, long time if they eat salads every day, I suppose. I don't know what's going on, Nasser, but it's crazy.
Staying offbeat, you know, his father, Bob Said, made it to Formula One, but that's another story. Shall we go back to the race?
Please.
Okay, top five after lap 10 of 70. Russell, Verstappen, Norris, Piastri, Alonso. DRS was enabled for the first time on lap 19. Lando put it to good use to take second from Max, and to borrow a phrase from David Hobbs, was immediately all over George like a cheap suit. A lap later, Lando was looking like a sharp-dressed man as he took the lead to be ZZ Top, or ZZ Top in England. Max also passed Russell. This was the beginning of the end of high hopes of George Russell and Mercedes to win race number one of the season. What the clouds could not do, Logan Sargeant did on lap 25. He spun, not for the first time in the race, but this time Sargeant was stranded on the track. I mean, you know, he's a nice kid, I think he's a good talent, but this is his second year in Formula One, and last year they had how many races? 20 plus races, right? And he's still, do you think he deserves to be in Formula One?
My first question is, when they said there was a yellow and somebody hit the wall, what name came into your mind briefly?
Logan Sargeant.
Gracias. So, if Pastor Maldonado was on the field, I would have said him, but no. Now, Logan Sargeant has taken over the iconic visionary's spot, and it's not good news. But Pastor Maldonado has texted Logan Sargeant and is invited to test an old Williams in downtown, wherever they live.
You know, interestingly, both of them were with he is with Williams, and Pastor was also with Williams. But Pastor did win a Grand Prix, beating Fernando Alonso in Barcelona. So we have to have respect for Monsieur Maldonado.
I concur.
Yes, okay. The safety car came out after Lando had passed the pit entry. This was beginning of the end of Papaya Dreams to win the race as both Max and Russell came in, which reminded me of Julian Palmer. Karma. Lando came out in third, and we all know what happens when Max takes the lead. Your dishes are done, wet or dry. Green means go on lap 30, top 5, Max, Russell, Norris, Piastri and LCH. He jumped his BFF during pit stops. Now, move of the race, which was very, very impressive, especially when they showed the aerial chart. That was the move made by Albon slicing through Honey Badger and Ocon. Did you like that, sir?
I did like that. I mean, there was a lot of luck involved. Albon's reaction was smooth and choreographed almost, where he sliced over, avoiding the one car, passing both cars in the end. It was awesome. A bit of a reminder of the old days at Spa, Schumacher, your buddy, and Mika Hakkinen.
Lap 45, Max in for slicks, Lando stays out. Lap 47, Lando set the fastest lap, and he had a cushion of 21 seconds over Max. At the end of the lap 47, he was in and did a little piggly-wiggly coming out of the pit lane, and Max bagged the lead. You know, this is my take on Max. In any race, normal circumstances, if there are 10 laps to go, and this guy is within 2-3 seconds of the race leader, Max is going to win that race. It's as simple as that. And then he started singing Bye Bye Miss McLaren Pie.
Really? That's awesome creativity.
He did. I heard it on the Dutch radio. The party was over for Scuderia Papaya as by lap 50 Max was already ahead by almost 4 seconds, putting McLaren on the Steely Dan program for Spain. Go back, Jack, do it again. Lap 51, George goes wide and loses second to Lando. Toto got on the team radio to sing his new tune. Focus, George, focus. Lap 54, Sainz Jr. spins and collect Albon. Safety car back in action. Both Williams and both Ferraris out. By now, Checo had also checked out of the race. At the end of lap 58, safety car was in, setting up a dozen laps of push and shove, or so we thought. Up front, it was smooth sailing by the St. Lawrence Sabre for the Red Bull Magic Man. Tremendous dicing between Piastri and Russell for the final step of the podium, and in their push and shove, it allowed LCH to get ahead of his teammate and get on the podium on lap 66 of 70. Here's another surprise. Yuki into the wall of voodoo with only a few laps remaining. On lap 69, George goes by LCH to get back on the podium. Checkered flag after lap 70, Max wins for victory number 60. Norris second, George third, LCH fourth, and set fastest lap of the race. Max message to the team, not easy, but we did it. Now here is why am I not surprised. Both Alpines were in the points, but once again there were communication issues with Ocon and the team. Like George Benson, he tried to talk it over, but words got in the way. He's lost in the Montreal masquerade. There are two drivers who should leave their respective teams because they are going nowhere. One is Lewis Hamilton, with mutual consent, and Esteban Ocon. Lewis goes, they can put in Andrea, Kimi, and Tonelli, and who they will put in place. Maybe they can put at Alpine Jack Doohan, which will be nice, and see how it works out. What say you?
I totally agree. I mean, LCH, he's very polite still, does what he's supposed to do, but the deep, deep psychological situation is he's at Ferrari now. You could tell he's not in it emotionally, critical, thinkingly. He's just going through the motions. And, I mean, it could be fine for Toto, but I think they really need to say goodbye earlier to get it over with and put in Antonelli. I think Antonelli needs the experience. LCH does not. LCH, actually, I think he needs a little respite before he goes to the other side. So, we'll see what happens.
Now, this thing will be of interest to you. Max winning the race reminded me of a Grand Prix at the Nürburgring in 2007, which was dominated by Felipe Massa and his Ferrari. But then, a little rainy night in Germany gave a little window of opportunity for someone else to slip in and snatch victory from Ferrari. That's someone I just can't seem to find his face in my mind right now. Who is that hombre, Mr. Rogers? Can you please help me make it through the night?
Fernando Alonso. Ah, 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 ah. Fernando Alonso. Ah, 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 ah.
Oh yes, El Machismo, the Spanish matador, got a tiny opportunity to take victory, and he grabbed the bull by the horn and ran with it. Now here is my favorite part, the argument he had in the green room, and that was between a Spanish-speaking driver and a Portuguese-speaking driver talking in Italian. That was a classic, one of the classic moments in all the years I've been watching Formula One. But you know, that's what great drivers do, win races even when they don't have the fastest car, and that's what we saw on Sunday. Let's listen to the race winner.
And our winner, taking the 60th win of his Formula One career and his third consecutive win here in Montreal, Max Verstappen. Very well done, Max. It was a breathless, spectacular race. How rewarding is a win like this?
Yeah, it's for sure. It's very rewarding. I mean, it's never an easy race. It's easy to make mistakes, especially on the inters when they were almost becoming slicks. You know, it was very easy to go off. Because the track was drying in most places, but in some corners it was still a bit too wet to go to slick tires. And yeah, that made it just very, very difficult. But yeah, it's a lot of fun to drive these kind of races now and then. You don't want it all the time because that's too stressful, but I had a lot of fun out there today.
As you say, it was stressful. There was a lot going on, but how calm was it inside the cockpit?
I think, yeah, of course, you are very focused, but you try to remain as calm as you can be, and also the communication to the pit wall and them to you to ask, you know, what are the conditions. And I definitely think as a team, you know, we did make the right calls today. And yeah, that of course, is also very important.
You made the right calls, but I think the timing of the safety car helped as well. Do you see that as payback for Miami?
Of course, it sometimes works for you and sometimes it works against you. So this time, it was working for us. So I guess in that sense, it's 1-1 now this year. But yeah, that's racing, you know, it's a part of it as well.
Now, even with this win, you haven't been completely happy with the car here. We go to Barcelona next. Do you think it'll be stronger there?
I would hope so, yes. I mean, the last few races have been quite difficult, but not only just difficult, too many problems as well throughout the whole weekend. So we need to have a cleaner weekend. And for sure, like even in the race now, we're struggling a lot with the curbing and the bumps. So we definitely have an area where we can work on and definitely improve the car by quite a big margin if we get that under control.
Very well done today, mate.
Championship number 4 is pretty much a done deal. In 2025, if competition does not have a car that is 0.5 second faster than Red Bull, then 5 in a row will be a Dutch treat with a side order of flan. Lando Norris had to settle for second. Strong possibility we will see him and hopefully his Aussie teammate also on the top step of the podium before the season is over. Oh, the humanity! Lewis Hamilton came in for a late tire change and was looking good for a rarity since Abu Dhabi 2021, a podium finish. But then Georgie Boy got on a Greyhound bus and sprinted ahead of the speed demon from Stevenage to get on the podium. Both Russell and Norris were licking their Alpo chops after the race. Could have, should have, would have. Max Verstappen remains the top dog when competition is fierce and intense like dog day afternoon. Your thoughts on the grand finale and anything else you would like to say, Mr. Rogers?
Well, the grand finale, it was really the coup, Max coming back, not only winning, but Ferrari failing completely. So the gap between Leclerc and Max Verstappen widens, and this was a terrible drop of the hat for Ferrari. When Max wins, they need to be getting points, because then you fall further and further behind. And unfortunately, once we get to Barcelona, we're talking Max Verstappen territory.
Yeah, he's going to be thinking about his first win, and this time he don't need two Ferraris to crash into each other so he can win. So it should be exciting. But sir, big news before the F1 entourage came to Canada. News came out that Sergio Perez has signed an extension with Red Bull. This was not a surprise, but 2 years did come as a surprise to me. But then again, millions and millions of pesos are ringing in from Mexico to Milton Keynes, thanks to Carlos Slim and his Telmex Corporation. As they say in a song, jets crash, hopes are dashed. That is what has happened to Carlos Sainz Jr. trying to get into a competitive seat. Toto Wolff has come out saying that he deserves a good seat, but not available, no vacancy at Mercedes. Carlito and Max were suffering from cat scratch fever when they were at Toro Rosso, and apparently that fever extended to their papitos also, Jos the Boss and Sainz Sr. also. I say, when you have Max in a team, you have JFK. You can afford to have a kindler and gentler quail in the other seat. In other words, no need to invite possibility of cage rattling. And what can cage rattling do to a team can be seen in a 15-minute review of the 2007 season, which the host has forgotten, but that's okay, when both McLaren drivers had a chance to win the championship, but they snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. Are you surprised Sergio is getting 2 more years at Red Bull?
I'm not surprised. Your point is correct. They wanted stability with Newey going away and all the bullshit around the team principal at Red Bull. It's been a headache, so They just wanted to get this done. That way there's nothing to think about. On the other hand, I feel terrible for Carlos Jr. I mean, it's that bad where he may wind up at Williams. I mean, can you imagine putting that on your resume? I replaced Logan Sargeant at Williams.
If you were to make the call for a driver in this situation, would you go Williams or Audi?
I would have gone Audi for sure. Audi is so tech savvy. Look what they did at Le Mans. Look at their history. These guys come out of the box pretty successfully. Ask Toyota and everybody else. So I don't know. He's not getting good advice, but he should have jumped on the Audi bandwagon. Look at Hulkenberg's face. I mean, it says it all.
Well, for once, maybe twice, I agree with you. Audi would be a better choice. Very deep in technology, in resources, part of Volkswagen, Porsche. And so they can go into different directions to get some help. You know, one of my friends, he's a professional photographer in Formula One. He said to me, we were talking on this issue, he said, Audi will never win anything. And I said, why? He said, because they're based in Switzerland and no good people, technical people from England want, they want to move to Switzerland. And, you know, most of the people working in Formula One or the people you want to hire are either English or based in England, whether they're from USA or New Zealand or South Africa, like Rory Byrne is another issue. But, you know, I do recall Sauber winning in Canada of all the places with a Polish driver. So I think they're going to come in with some very serious intentions, with some very good people, and throw a lot of money at it. And like I've always said many times, throughout the 100-plus year history of motor racing, anytime any German company has come into racing, whether it's Auto Union, Mercedes, BMW, whatever, in due course of time, they have cleaned everybody's clock. Remember, BMW was the first turbo world champion company with Piquet in 1983. And remember when they had that four-cylinder qualifying engine pumping 1,200 horsepower?
Unbelievable. That was the M10 four-cylinder engine block. If you read the history of that, just the block itself is fascinating and encouraging.
Yeah, so I hope Carlos signs, plus Audi will pay him a lot of money. Not that he needs money, but I think it would be a much better. But Mr. James Vowles, he is speaking very openly that, you know, they want to have Carlos signs. And I just don't think Williams is going anywhere.
It just depends on investment. I don't know what's going on at Williams. I mean, let me put it this way. They've put up with Logan Sargeant for way too long for no reason. Well, there's a reason, but I don't want to get into that. But Williams and Vowles, I think he has great hope of putting Williams back in the top five as soon as possible. And certainly somebody as competitive as Carlos Sainz Jr. would be a coup, but they're going to have to dig into their little pockets.
Okay, we move on to Jib Jab from JV, Jacques Villeneuve, Formula One and Indy 500 champion. He has come out with some interesting comments regarding Lewis Hamilton's remaining days at Mercedes. He said, and I quote, "Sometimes you need new ingredients on your plate. You get bored with the same taste over and over again. That taste for Lewis at Mercedes is now stale. The fresh air of Ferrari might help him." End quote. I say the green leaves of summer are calling LCH to Maranello. After some Asti Spumanti and Prosciutto, LCH is going to get down to business and get ahead of the eight ball in due course of time. Man, can you imagine Lewis Hamilton winning a championship with Ferrari? That will rock me Amadeus and Alonso. And that's when I will call you and say, good evening, Mr. Rogers.
It would be exciting. I'm happy for him. I hope he gets a nice Italian girlfriend whose first name is Sofia. So, of course, I want him to succeed at Ferrari because that's, let's all face it, folks, the fantasy of driving a Ferrari and winning in a Ferrari is in every man's dream. I don't care how long you've been at Mercedes. Mercedes is a little Achtung, schnell, was ist los. You know, it's not sexy. But once he gets to Ferrari, he's going to go, Mamma mia!
No, it's just that logo, prancing horse, the history, Enzo Ferrari, and man, it's just incredible. And that's where Michael Schumacher race, whom he matched in terms of championships. Thank you, Mr. Massey, and scored more wins than him. So it's going to be a very incredible story. And the story right now we have to look forward to is a little break and some Aquafina.
That's very true. I just want to bring up, can you imagine Lewis Hamilton at the Cavallino restaurant right there with the boys, you know, the gang from the Ferraris? Oh, my God. At lunchtime, having a little vino, a little mozzarella. Oh, my God. He's going to be living it up. We're going to see a new fattened up Lewis Hamilton. On that note, why don't we get a couple of Aquafinas and take a quick break, and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm Elio Castroneves, four-time Indy 500 champion, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial, with the king, the Sultan himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. I hate to start with some sad news, but everybody has to go someday. The last week, Parnelli Jones passed away. He was one of the greats of IndyCar racing. You know, he was from the era of A.J. Foyt, Unser brothers, Mario Andretti, a great racing legend. He won the 1963 Indy 500. He was winning in NASCAR. He won Baja 1000. He was born in a town called Texarkana in Arkansas, but then moved to with his family as a seven-year-old to Torrance, California, and that's where he lived till he passed away. And then, you know, his two sons, PJ and Paige, they used to race also. Paige was seriously injured in an accident. He's doing okay now. And PJ, I met PJ many times because he used to race at with Dan Gurney's GTP team, Toyota GTP team, and met Parnelli also a couple of times. He was a great character, and I'm going to tell you, man, something that was very impressive. Some years ago, I was reading an article with interview in Motorsports Magazine, which is like the industry standard for historical racing, and there was an interview with Chris Amon, and they asked him who was the best driver he ever raced against or, you know, encountered in his life, and the name he took was Parnelli Jones, and that was very, very impressive. And this is what Roger Penske had to say, I quote, "The racing world has lost a great competitor and a true champion. Parnelli Jones was one of the most accomplished racers in history, and his determination and will to win made him one of the toughest competitors I have ever seen," end quote. You know, after his racing days were over, he got in team ownership with his longtime business partner Val Miletic. He was originally from Yugoslavia, based in Southern California, and I believe he ran car dealerships. So they had a very successful team in IndyCar racing with Al Unser. They won the Indy 500. And Val Sparnelli also had a team in Formula One in the early 70s, and one of their drivers was Mario Andretti. So a great loss to the world of motor racing, and our condolences to the Parnelli family and his friends. Anything you want to add, sir?
A fantastic part of American history. Not only motorsports, but everything else. Awesome. He had a great life, and yeah, I was bummed out when I saw the press release.
Okay, so now shout out to F1 Weekly familiar member Ron Fielding. He sent me a link to a story on Giancarlo Fisichella by Matt Bishop in Motorsports Magazine. A theme of the story was Fisico lacking in killer instinct? I think Fisico was a very good driver, like DC. He could be unbeatable on his day, but as DC himself said about his own career, such days for him were rare for both DC and also for Fisico. Now, Jenson Button, who was his teammate at Benetton, has a very high opinion of Fisichella, saying he could get the most out of a car even if the car was not competitive. That's how Fisico. IndyCar news, this is strange, you know, death threats against French driver Théo Pourchaire. Not sure what's up with some fans of Agostino Canapino, but they are at it again. You know, Agostino Canapino is from Argentina, and he's racing for Juncos Hollinger Racing, and Ricardo Juncos is also from Argentina. Nice guy, and we have interviewed him in the past. Last year they issued death threats against Canapino's teammate, who at that time was Callum Ilott, after they too did tango on a track. Now they're doing the same thing with Pourchaire. The French driver made contact with Canapino last weekend in the IndyCar Detroit Destruction Derby. And then McLaren team, they had a sort of a business relationship with Hunkos. They have cancelled that, and they have issued a statement condemning such behavior, as there is no comment. At this time, there is no comment from Canapino's team, Hunkos Hollinger. So we'll see how this thing worked out. And what the team did, they benched Agostino Canapino from the race last weekend, yesterday at Road America. As we all know, it takes one stinky fish to mess up the pool, and the IndyCar race in at Elkhart Lake, which is one of the most beautiful and best tracks in this country, was won by Willpower, like you said, and it was a pesky 1-2-3. This is a track that's very high on my list, and I'm hoping before winter sets in, I can go and at least see the track. You also mentioned Jamie Chadwick. She is in the American Formula 2 called Indy Next. And man, this was a very, very impressive performance. She was fastest in qualifying. And there are some drivers like Louis Foster, Nolan Siegel, Josh Abel, who are very, very quick. And for her to beat these boys fair and square in qualifying, in race, in normal racing condition, I mean, this was no Covey victory. You know, somebody blows out and you win the race. So kudos to Jamie Chadwick. I think it will do her career a lot of good. And Mr. Michael Andretti, who is her team owner, he was also very happy. And I think there have been three races in this series, you know, previously it was known as Indy Lights, that were won by lady drivers. But this is the first time a race has been won on a road course. So this is very, very impressive, and I'm very happy for her. Would you have any comments, sir?
I was super impressed. Road America, Elkhart Lake is a fantastic track, very technical. And if you're going to win something and you win there, you should be proud of yourself. So yeah, Jamie Chadwick has been around for a while. She was champion in the W Series. She worked with Williams. And I was super happy. And some people are saying we'll have a woman in Formula One soon. I don't know about that, but it's awesome.
Yes. And sir, I think it's time to we apologize for the sound quality, but this is an interesting brief conversation with Danny Sullivan, the spin and win meister from the 1985 Indy 500. And before we go there, just a reminder that the 1973 Canadian Grand Prix saw the first use of safety car in Formula One. So, sir, with that, shall we invite Mr. Sullivan into the Palatial Studios?
Yes, sir.
And I have tremendous, because I followed your career for a long time, I have tremendous respect for you. You went from Gopher to Grand Prix driver at Tyrrell. What do you think about the American in Formula One now, Logan Sargeant? You think he will survive?
He's in a very tough situation because the car is not very good, but he needs to kind of be almost on par with Albon, because Albon's rated. So you kind of need to at least have the speed, and you kind of have to have that. It's a little bit like about, let's just take, for example, just sidebar for a second. Okay, Sainz he's going to be let go because they got Lewis and Leclerc. Sainz been quicker for that. Logan needs to have some of those moments where he's not just one session where he's quicker than Albon, but he needs to be consistently right there. Look at Daniel with Shinoda. You know, it's the same situation. The person you're going to be compared the most to is your teammate, because that's the one that's got the same car. So I think Logan's focus, and I'm not saying he's not focused, so please don't take that, because I have no idea, but his focus has to be competitive or better than Albon as many times as he can.
Now, speaking of Lewis, do you think he will get championship number 8 in a red car before Alonso gets championship number 3 in a green car? What say you?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. It's amazing. Lewis,
I think that Alonso, let's say, I mean, he's amazing. He's, you know, tremendously fit. He's aggressive. He's got a great right attitude. mentally very strong, maybe as sharp as anybody out there. And for me, the problem is they got to start winning races on a regular basis before I would put him up to for, over Farrar, if that makes sense.
You think Adrian Newey is moving to Maranello?
I think that's a $64,000 question. I think the only person that really, really knows in their mind on percentage points is he. And maybe the wife. Maybe.
Now, you've raced against Mario Andretti, great competitor, great name in the world of motor racing. I personally feel that he was insulted by FOM by not giving him an entry on his son. What's your take on that?
I see it from both sides. The pie's cut up in 10 pieces right now. If you're one of the guys at the lower end of that pie, you don't want somebody coming in that's maybe going to move you down one more spot to get the piece of the pie. So, and what I've always felt that the unanimous vote is pretty hard to achieve in a lot of things. I think it gets stuff stalled. I'm not saying it should be 60%, but I think it should be 70-80%, where if everybody votes, you know. But look, I'm pro Andretti's because I think they're fantastic. It'd be great for Cadillac to come in, even though Cadillac wasn't going to start off building their own engine. But Ford's supposed to come in with Red Bull. They're not building an engine. You know, it's a shared relationship. So I think it would be good for the public and for American. We're the only country that has three races. And if you really think about it, you know, Cadillac Man's still pretty big in Europe, but if you take even five races counting Mexico and Montreal, that's a pretty big chunk of the pie.
Now, I understand you were involved in the Red Bull search for American driver. Is there any involvement you have in motor racing these days?
No.
Still loving it, though.
Yeah, and I was with the FIA for 14 years and stopped last year was my last race. And so I talk and do some stuff sometimes with Formula One, but no, I'm just enjoying it. And I've got some other businesses, and we're building a racing club and a P1 motor club that I'm a consultant on up in Fort Pierce. It's like, think of a country club, but with cars, tracks, garages, everything like that.
Florida's version of Thermal Club?
Yeah.
Or better.
But better.
Of course.
Florida's version of, yeah, that'd be a good way to put it.
Now, I remember your comment. Remember the Michael Schumacher parking incident? I think that race, I think it was on CBS, and you were one of the commentators, and you made a comment that Michael thought he was cute, but he was actually very cute. Do you remember that?
No.
Words to that effect?
No. When was it?
When he did that parking in Monaco.
Oh, in Monaco. Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah. Hey, look. These guys, he, Alonso, most of these guys, they're very clever. They know what they know. They're on top of them. They're making stuff like that. They know what they're doing.
All right. Speaking of clever, do you think Captain's team was too clever in St. Pete? Any comment on that?
Well,
want to take the fifth?
I'm going to take the fifth because I just don't know the whole story about everything that went on. But for me, having driven for Penske for all those years, that's very unlike RP. When we were ever, you know, look, everybody's trying to find the unfair advantage. For me, Roger's like everybody else trying to find, but he would never go over the line. So that's why it was a surprise to me.
Always a great pleasure.
Thank you
for your time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Back to you, Nass.
Thank you, sir. And, sir, since the Canadian, as you know, the Canadian Grand Prix is in the French-speaking part of Canada, the place, the track, has not been kind to French drivers. Both Jean-Pierre Jabouille and Olivier Panis broke their legs in Montreal. And I think so did, what's this guy's name from New Zealand, the young kid? Mike Tacquell. So that's a little bit more histoire on the Canada Grand Prix. Okay, sir, now we come to famous last words. Your favorite, Pedro de la Rosa, brand ambassador for Aston Martin, speaking of team's non-Spanish driver, who just happened to be team owner's son, and who has been driving in Formula One for many years now. This is what he said, very interesting, and I quote, "He's learning a lot with Fernando. They work together very well. And it's just a matter of time before we see the best lands and a big explosion of talent. End quote. Talk about putting Paco Rabanne on a pig. I see an explosion of dollars and cents in Pedro de la Rosa's bank account. Now, Mr. Rogers, you are an authority on Alonso. How much of his immense talents can be transferred or has been transferred to Lance?
Well, you know, if I was Mr. Spock, I could come up with a theory on brain waves and transference, but I can't. Lance does what he does, and you know, he's not that bad. I mean, in Canada, he was right behind Fernando. P2, well, he finished P7, Fernando started P6, finished P6. Really, for what the Aston Martin is providing these gentlemen, Lance is doing pretty good sticking with Fernando. And you know what? If you're going to hang out with anybody in this Formula One paddock, Fernando es el más macho.
Wow, sounds like you're up for a job interview with Lawrence Stroll.
Exactly. They pay good money.
Yeah, great. Okay, now it's time for Tech Talk from Mr. Tim Schwartz.
Greetings, race fans. You may recall back in 2022, the F1 cars changed substantially due to a series of major technical rule changes mandated by the FIA. Well, just last week, the FIA announced that 2026 is going to bring a new round of large updates, and I'm here to walk through what the draft of those updates looks like and the effects that they may have on the teams and the races. The first is a 30-kilogram reduction in minimum car weight down to 768 kilograms. On its own, this change would make for faster acceleration of the cars, but as I'll discuss soon, there are also changes to power units and aerodynamics that will affect the forces on the cars. Now, there have been reports that the teams may have some trouble actually finding places to save this weight, and if they are unable to do so, some cars may start the season at a disadvantage. Thanks to safety regulations, for example crash testing of the car survival cells, teams can't get away with removing too much weight from essential safety components, so there's no pressure to put driver safety on the line in search of weight savings. That's good. That's what a governing body should do. But then, finding opportunities for weight savings elsewhere in the car is already difficult. If you ask me, I don't necessarily think this is a completely bad thing. I think it means that there's one more area where the teams can compete, and as a fan, I don't have to be the one to do the hard work to find the weight savings. I just get to watch. But I do worry about better-funded teams strengthening their grip on the top spots even further. Along with the reduction in weight comes a reduction in car size, with the wheelbase, so that's the distance between the front and rear axles, being reduced by about 8%, and the width being reduced by 5%. Tire width will also decrease on the fronts and rears. Tire and car shape changes will provide some opportunity for at least a portion of the weight savings discussed earlier, but this should hopefully make the cars, in the words of the FIA, more agile. Ideally, this will promote overtaking, which is often a major goal of rule changes. In 2026, floor shape will change, and the size of the floor will also be reduced. The role of the diffuser in generating downforce will be reduced as well. As the underbody elements become less responsible for the production of downforce, porpoising should continue to be alleviated as it has been for several years now. And the front winglets over the wheels are going away for 2026. The FIA expects these changes in car shape, car size, and tires to reduce downforce as well as drag. This would tend to make the cars accelerate faster, but have less grip while cornering. So there is potential that this could be counterproductive to overtaking. To combat putting overtaking at risk, the principles of movable aerodynamics that we were used to with DRS will be expanded. Rear and now front wings will have movable elements. So there will be a low downforce mode called X mode, which can be used on the straights, and a high downforce mode called Z mode, which can be used while cornering. As far as power units go, the overall 1.6 liter V6 configuration remains. However, the battery capacity has doubled, and the max power output capability and brake harvesting rate are tripled. Meanwhile, the power output of the combustion engine is reduced by about 30%. We'll have to see whether the gains in electrical contribution and the reduction in combustion contribution result in net faster or slower lap times. My thinking is that the values were changed in such a way in order not to have a large net effect on lap times one way or another, but we'll see. Certainly the cars have become more sustainable as the max power contribution from electrical and combustion are now close to even, and fuels will be 100% sustainably sourced in 2026. A further change regarding the electrical system is what's called manual override mode. This allows a car trailing another car by a second or less to use electrical energy at higher speeds than is normally available. This should help promote overtaking, and it seems to be a mix of existing F1 hybrid boosting, the timing aspects of DRS, and some concepts from other series such as IndyCar's Push to Pass. We'll see if it makes for more exciting racing or adds unnecessary complexity. Finally, there are some improvements to car safety, such as strengthening designed to protect the driver and fuel cells from side intrusions of other cars, and two-stage crash structures in the nose to prevent elements such as front wings from becoming dislodged. So that's a high-level summary of the changes for 2026. Lots of work now for the teams to accommodate these changes while remaining competitive. And us fans will get to look forward to seeing how these affect lap times, overtaking, and excitement.
Tim, keep up the good work. Now we all understand. Nasser?
Okay, so looking ahead, this morning I made another call to Dr. Marco's assistant. She said she will let me know this week if he's available for an interview in his hometown of Graz after the British Grand Prix. I heard the same thing last week, but I'm running out of time. So let's see what happens. I'll give her a call again on Friday, and let's see if we can work something out. Now, interestingly, when you call his hotel, the music they play while they put you on hold is not Vienna Calling from Falco, but Strangers in the Night from Chairman of the Board. I think being in the hotel business, Strangers in the Night is a much better choice than Heartbreak Hotel. What say you?
Strangers in the Night, exchanging glances.
Yes, a very, very beautiful and a very famous song all over the world. Okay, sir, thanks to your singing, it brings us to Musical Mondial. Race was in Canada, music today is from north of the border, and the orchestra of Percy Faith. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy Theme from a Summer Place.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye-bye.